Okay, I've just biked up to this building, which I believe is the right building. It says Staatsbedrijven. There's an official Dutch sign outside. I'm not exactly sure where I should go yet, but I'm going to have a look around and try to figure it out.
This is my first visit to one of the temporary housing facilities where many Ukrainian refugees took shelter when the war broke out 2 years ago. This municipality building is located in Utrecht, so I'm able to bike there pretty easily. The building was previously used as a temporary hospital during the pandemic and as a homeless shelter. It's got room for up to 68 people, and they've also set up some temporary cabins on the grounds with room for 65 more. I text this week's guest shortly after parking my bike, and she meets me outside.
Lena, so nice to meet you.
So nice to meet you.
Lena is Ukrainian, 40 years old, and fled the war from her home in Kyiv shortly after it began. She greets me with a very warm, welcoming smile. As we walk around the grounds of the facility, she directs my attention to some of the temporary housing cabins and the way the people have made them their own.
They are also managing to have some garden, to have some place.
Feeling like a little bit like home.
Yes, like home. They are planting flowers. It's very nice. Like having some table outside. Making barbecue. You have some basic things, but you still need some coziness to feel like at home.
Here, Lena pauses for a moment to ask a friend passing by about whether I can leave my bike where I've parked it.
Yes, there's no problem.
Was that Russian you were speaking, or was that Ukrainian?
Yes, I switched to Russian. It's a big topic for me about this language conflict.
She explains that while it's sometimes easier to communicate or answer quick questions using the Russian language, this practice bothers her more and more, especially in light of what's happening in her country. She tells me that speaking the Ukrainian language has become its own form of protest.
Because that was also one of the reasons why the war started, actually. Officially from Russia, they said that in Ukraine, Ukrainian-speaking people are limiting Russian-speaking people, that Russian language is pushed down, which is completely not true. Yeah, that was official reason of Putin's invasion, kind of, to protect Russian-speaking people. Now I want to protect Ukrainian language more, because now Ukrainian is punished. It's a tiny part of a huge, long history of Russian-Ukrainian relationship.
We enter the building and walk through lots of doors and hallways as Lena gives me a brief tour around the facility. We arrive in a common room that Lena has found for us to use. As we enter the room, she makes a point of letting me know how grateful she is to be there and that people can have pets in the facility.
It's allowed to stay with pets. And I'm so happy with that because we have someone to hug.
You're listening to the Start With Your Name podcast. I'm your host, Lee Kaplan. I became an immigrant in 2020. When I moved from Brooklyn, New York to my new home in the Netherlands. With every episode of this podcast, immigrants, refugees, and asylum seekers will have an opportunity to share their story. And we will have an opportunity to listen. Just to listen. And perhaps gain new insights into what it's like to leave everything behind and start all over again. Each episode is an exploration of someone's lived experience, their background, their hopes and dreams, and the story of what brought them to a new country, far from home. And that begins, quite simply, with their name. Today's episode, Lena.
So when I was born, my dad, he wanted actually a son, traditional story, and upset to me, but okay, I can deal with this. Okay, this is a girl. And let's call her just she. In Russian, it sounds ona, like he, she. Yeah. In Russian, it's on, ona. But he said, let's call her ona, like just switch a little bit pronunciation. And it sounds quite gentle name, ona. Like onochka, in a sweet way, in Russian, Ukrainian, it would sound onochka, ona. And they wanted to call me Ona. And also my dad is a fan of Beatles and Yoko Ono. It was, okay, let's call her Ona. Actually, I like it, how it sounds. But when they went to register this name, it was rejected Because they had a list of, in Soviet Union, they had a list of names which are allowed to register.
The Soviets rejected the name because it wasn't on their list of approved names?
Yes. Because this name doesn't exist, because it was invented. So they said, no, such name doesn't exist, so we can't call her Anna. We don't know this name.
So then how does he get to the name that he actually named you?
Yes, and then they still found, okay, let's find some other original name. And they found this one, uncommon and not very known.
But Lena was somehow approved by the Russian authority then, right? Because they...
God bless, it's not Anna, so okay, we can accept Lena.
Full disclosure, I'm charmed by her name because my own great-grandmother, who moved from Belarus to New York in the early 1900s, was also named Lena.
Our family mostly comes out of Minsk.
Minsk? Oh, yeah. I love the Russian people so much. I have good friends from Belarus. So I was born in Soviet Union.
And what's the name of the city where you grew up?
It's called Chervonograd.
What kind of a childhood did you have?
Oh, a happy childhood.
Lena grew up in Western Ukraine, where her parents still live to this day, speaking both Ukrainian and Russian. She has an older stepsister from her mother's first marriage and lots of cousins who lived nearby when she was young. Her father was raised in the Donbas region of Ukraine, where much of the current fighting is taking place, made the move to Western Ukraine to pursue an interest in coal mining, and met Lena's mother after moving there.
It was kind of protest to get married with a lady who's having a kid. In a small city, in the Soviet times, people are judging a lot when there's a lot of stereotypes about being divorced and being a single mom, things like that. So I always liked this part of my dad a lot. That such a generous act, it's quite romantic.
While Lena's mother worked at a local lingerie factory, her father held multiple posts in addition to his work at the coal mines.
So he was working at coal mines, teaching at a technical college, working in a restaurant, and playing in rock band.
Yep, you heard it right. Lena's dad was a local rock star.
Still known enough to get a concert in Lviv Opera even. And they had like two albums, I think, or three albums. It sounds quite cute, this Soviet rock with naive text, to be honest, like naive but protesting rock songs. And all these mustaches. I can see that my parents were really stylish. Like they had these jeans sewed by themselves. Like my mom was sewing like different kind of dresses and she was also very stylish and my dad was having mustaches and stylish jeans. Also he was having a bike, what was also very cool. It's my favorite photo. Like this hair, stylish mustaches and the bike.
You're making a motion of like a motorbike.
Motorbike, yes. It was also quite like expensive back the times, like few motorbikes for an old city and everybody knows who is the owner. Like, you know, this is that rock style, rock star.
Lena had just started primary school in 1991 when the Soviet Union collapsed. While she doesn't remember a lot about that moment in her young life, she shares two specific memories that illuminate what her life was like at that time. First, she tells me she spent a lot of time with her grandmother because her parents were regularly on the road crossing the border into Poland, selling goods on the open market.
I remember that my granny, she was having these coupons, like tickets. Ticket for a bread, ticket for a milk, ticket for porridge. She was even saving some high heels shoes for me when I was only 6. It's for you, for your future, it's for your marriage. You will get this, you will have this. She was saving everything because people didn't know if they will have anything in the future. Because they were very poor, nothing was available. As a kid, you don't feel it. You just accept what life gives you and you're happy with that. You don't complain. If your granny is giving you these red shoes, you think, wow, one day I will wear this for my marriage. And you're happy with that.
The second memory she shares is a moment when her father traveled to Poland and brought Lena along as his guest.
It was very special when we just stopped at a gas station, I think. And he brought me, I'm looking at this colorful like small shop just full of different kind of candies and different kind of toys. Just this average gas station small shop. Maybe he could see how amazed I am. And he said, just pick up anything you would like. Maybe you'd like something. And then I'm thinking, wow, like what should I choose? Like it's amazing. But I was also shy a lot. Like there was a lot of toys. And there was one beautiful toy, like a doggy, soft doggy looking at me. And I was looking at this doggy, but it was so unavailable because it was like big, so it must be expensive. And I just said to my dad, that little toy, I picked up one little one. My dad is also a big dog lover. And he just said, don't you want that dog? Like that big dog? I said, yes, yes, of course. So it was the biggest toy in that store. And he bought me that doggy, soft doggy. And I was sleeping with him all my life.
Lena tells me she attended a really good school while she was growing up, with an emphasis on the English language, literature, and history. Armed with a very good education, Lena graduates high school and decides to go to university in Kyiv, where she spends 5 years getting a public relations degree. She remained in Kyiv after graduation, worked in PR for a while, and then took an interest in freelance photography. She's in Kyiv in 2013 when Russia annexes Crimea. While this is an event that resonated the whole world over, I'm blown away by what Lena tells me about the very personal connection she has to that region.
Because our family, we had a house in Crimea, and Crimea was annexed, so a big part of our soul was annexed as well.
She's laughing, but at this moment, it's very clear that it masks the pain and anguish she felt at the loss of their family home. A big part of their soul, in her words. It is in these moments during my conversation with Lena where I can sense the overwhelming outsized pain she's endured over the last decade of her life. Starting with the annexation of Crimea in 2013 up until right now, her world has literally been turned inside out.
I really loved Crimea. It was so releasing for me to be there and healing, very healing. I could achieve such meditation there without meditating. It was a big loss for all our family, but for me, I would say a lot. I spent a lot of time there, even staying till winter time at late autumn, because it's the best time where there's no people. It's just pure sea as it is, without tourists, without crowds. And you're just breathing this fresh air, meditating, reading, being just uniting with this nature.
The way she describes Crimea sounds idyllic, peaceful, and relaxing. This area that is so easy to think of as a war-torn battlefield takes on a very different identity as Lena is talking. She gets an idea in the years that follow to create a photo exhibition inspired by Crimea, a creative way of expressing her feelings over the loss of their family home.
And we were still visiting Crimea after annexation, and having curious mind also opened to all aspects of human beings and human souls. I was meeting different people with different opinion and opposite opinion, because there was a lot of Russian soldiers in Crimea as well. And I had some conversations with them. The idea was about finding a balance in all of this.
Finding balance.
Balance, because it's such a challenge. You're going there, signing on the border, immigration card, reason of visiting, nationality, all the passports, datas, and you're, well, I'm just going to my summer house where I used to have a rest. And my way of protest was to fill immigration card in English language, not in Russian. Because I didn't want to accept their rules. So I was feeling in English language, just deal with these guys. Yeah, and we were coming with my mom there and seeing all the like soldiers around and pro-Russian people around. And being not allowed actually to speak up that we are from Western Ukraine because it was a little bit dangerous. Because it's a small village, everybody can see where you live. And then when you leave, we don't know what can happen.
As a coda to this story, she tells me that only recently, her family received notices in the mail that their house in Crimea was going to be destroyed.
My parents were figuring out if it's possible to solve this somehow, but it's not. we accepted it.
Yeah.
We look at things as let it be the biggest loss, like in this situation. It's better to give something material or financial than in other things.
In hindsight, we all now know that this was only the beginning of the heavy losses the Ukrainian people would suffer at the hands of the Russians, with a much bigger war waiting on the horizon. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Good evening, and thanks for joining us. We begin with the uncertainty over what the Russian president intends to do about Ukraine.
Lena was living alone in Kyiv in January 2022. She started walking dogs to make money, even as she continued her work on the Crimea project. With all that as a backdrop, Russia starts making noise about invading. She tells me that one of her regular customers left their dog with her around this time, but something felt not quite right.
It was a little bit strange. Because firstly, when they called me, they asked, "Hi, Lena, how are you doing? Are you staying in Kyiv?" They asked. That was a strange question for me. Of course, I'm living here, was the question about. A lot of people knew what's going to happen, especially people with connections from some bigger business. A lot of people like that left country and from government.
And what was your take on it when you started to hear these things? What did you think?
I didn't believe anything like that, because also my friend from USA, she was crying, because in USA they had clear information without any hesitations, without any doubts. And she was crying, asking me what I'm gonna do and how am I doing, what's my plan. I didn't have any plan. I'm not watching television as well. I've been working in media, and I don't want to panic that much, so...
So you sort of stopped looking at the TV, stopped...
I avoided any kind of information.
She tells me she was having some health issues that started before the new year in 2022. She was exhausted and had suffered a burnout. As a result, she decided to stay away from making any big moves or big decisions in the new year.
It has happened. This is Ukraine's capital. What seemed unthinkable in the 21st century is now underway. A democratic country has been invaded by its nuclear-armed neighbor on multiple fronts. People are not safe in their own homes. It is a full-scale attack, forcing Ukrainians to decide whether to flee or to fight.
The morning of February 24th, where were you? What were you doing?
I woke up of explosions. I didn't understand what's happening. I must say I felt tension in the air 2 days before, and people texting me, where am I and what I'm gonna do. Somehow, maybe subconsciously, I was avoiding this information. I didn't take it seriously at all. I was trying to sleep more. I didn't even think that it's something real. Also, I'm living not far from some factories, like beer factory, like a famous Ukrainian beer factory. I thought it's something industrial happened. When I couldn't sleep, of course, I stand up later and already could see people are, I have some short videos and photos from the time. People are like packed and getting all around, going all around with their suitcases, already packed. And I just stuck on my sofa. I didn't know what to do because my task was to go outside with the doggy. Actually, every morning routine, and doggy was just like sitting waiting for me. Like, could we please go outside? And then I dared to, also I wanted just to have coffee, to calm down, and then watch any television, to have things clear. And when I switched on television, I've seen that Russia invaded Ukraine, but I didn't like it, so I just switched off television. And I thought, okay, maybe they will get some updates and later I will get more clear information. I don't want to panic right now. I choose not to panic. But my friends were texting me and my mom and my cousin, who was back the time in Paris, I think. He texted me, go to bomb shelter and things like that.
He was saying, you need to go to a bomb shelter right now.
And reality was still fine for me, kind of. I didn't have this in my mind. I didn't accept the situation. I was just afraid to go outside. So I was sitting on the sofa. So we have the three reactions, like fight, run away, or freezing. I was just freezing, not able to stand up. And then I went out with the doggy already at 12 o'clock. And it was such a tension in the air. People were frightened. Like a little bit, like not frightened, but disturbed on the streets. Some planes were flying to the Belarusian border, and I've had some worries in my heart. I got in touch with some of my friends in Kyiv, and everybody already left. I wasn't gonna leave my flat. It's my home. I'm not gonna leave it.
Lena's cousin puts her in touch with a friend of his, and she gets a text inviting her to join them in the bomb shelter at a local school.
And it was in my area. She said, we are really close, at least you can sleep at night. So come here, it's warm. Because we had like bomb shelters at the basement of the living buildings, but it's wet, it's dark, there's no fresh air, and it's difficult. So I decided, I took some food and just went to this bomb, because she said there's not enough space left, but you still can have some place to lay, to sleep. But of course, you can't sleep. Like, everybody's there, but you can't sleep because you don't understand what's gonna happen next minute.
I'm wincing as Lena is describing her experience. She goes for one night to the shelter, returns to her apartment the next day, and then goes again to the shelter at night. On day three of the war, she hears from her cousin's friend, who had connections with the Ukrainian police, that the bombing was expected to get worse. She invites Lena to join them in getting out of the city and going to the Carpathian mountain region in western Ukraine. Holding out hope that the bombing will end after a few days, Lena decides to join them.
They insisted, and I joined them, but they didn't have enough space for the doggy. So the doggy was given to another car.
So here she is, sitting in a car with a group of strangers, people she'd only met 2 days prior, leaving the city where she'd spent the last two decades and heading west.
Of course, I was worried, but still, I thought it's a short-term thing. It will take a few days, so I will go with them, maximum for a week. I didn't think in long-term at all. I was just, okay, they say it's dangerous. Yeah, I think it is. We could see the news and all the updates. Maybe it's a chance to really to go to Carpathians.
Lena's story continues in our next episode. Here's a preview.
It's a guilt of survivor. Then even when you feel happy, when you are in love, when you are in any happy situation, you don't accept it because you feel guilty that now you are happy.